Welcome back to Shattering Mist. We're in the opening statement of what is the most profound, the most relevant, the most important part of Yahweh's Torah. It begins in Bereshith 12:1. Everything up to this point has introduced us to Yahweh, explained his role in the creation of the universe with the establishment of life, his role with the Garden of Eden and relationship with Adam and Chawa, and then transitioning from that to his relationship with Noah, the ark that he provided guidance for Noah to build and how it kept his family safe from the religious and political corruption that had arisen all around them. And from there, we find ourselves in this discussion. And it is based on any rational analysis of the evidence, it's the single most important discussion in the world. It's not only the centerpiece of the Torah, the most important part of the Torah. I would dare anyone to find and offer a more relevant, a more insightful, a more important, a more empowering, a more beneficial discussion than Yahweh's presentation of his covenant to Abraham. I don't think you would take that bet, would you, Larry?
No, I wouldn't. No. I think in the interactions with that we see Yahweh having with Abraham, we actually see the covenant.
Well, did not Yahweh tell Abraham at the end of all of this that because you have listened to me and you've acted upon what I have asked and requested, that I have established my covenant with you? So do we not have at the end of all of this Yahweh affirming that Abraham was a beneficiary of the covenant because he listened to God and he engaged acting upon what he said?
Yeah, he trusted him and acted upon what he said. He engaged. And then we had a relationship, and salvation is a byproduct of a relationship, because at that point he's known.
Yeah. Okay, so therefore, if we want to know how it is that Abraham became a participant in the covenant and received the benefits of the covenant, we have to go back to the first of the discussions and instructions and guidance that Yahweh had with Abraham, correct?
That's right.
All right. So that begins with this statement. And unless you think that you're more important to God than was Abraham, that you're better than Abraham, that you have a different way to approach God than the way that God articulated to Abraham, you better listen to this and act upon it. Otherwise, I'm afraid you're going to be on the wrong side of the door to heaven. And Yahweh said, now that means that if your God is Jesus Christ, you're in trouble. The covenant is not being offered by Jesus Christ. The covenant is not being offered by an Allah. The covenant is not being offered by a Jehovah. The covenant is not being offered by a Lord. If your God hails by any of those names, you're in trouble already. This covenant relationship is being offered by Yahweh. And Yahweh said, this is Amar, it means to promise, to affirm, to communicate, to propose. To Abram. Names are fairly important, aren't they, in Hebrew, Larry?
Well, they're extremely important. I went through this with a fellow last night. Yeah, they're incredibly important. And that's why we're not to change Yahweh saves or Yahusha. To you know, the name of the Druid savior at Stonehenge, Hesus. I mean,
Hesus, yeah. And Yahweh, when he was communicating with Moshe, introducing himself to Moshe, did he provide Moshe, and therefore us, with the basis of his name?
Yes.
What did he say it was based on?
Moshe, you mean?
When Yahweh was talking to Moshe and he was introducing himself by name.
Based on existence.
Right. The Hebrew word for existence, which is Haya.
Haya. Yeah.
Yeah. So Yahweh said, my name is based upon the Hebrew verb Haya. Now, hey is an interesting word in Hebrew. Hey, yod, hey. Reading from right to left or from left to right. It is the tells us how to pronounce Hayah. It also tells us to pronounce three of the four letters in Yahweh's name, the Yod and the Hey. Mm-hmm. And so it is anybody that pronounces Yahweh or Yeh, Shua, they're disassociating Yahweh's name from the verb that he said it was based on, which is
you can't take
Hayah.
Existence out of Yahweh's name. You can't do that.
Right. And so, right. So no. Yahweh is his name. It is Yahusha and Yahweh. And Yahweh is based upon the Hebrew verb Hayah, which means to exist. In first person, as Yahweh communicated it to Moshe, he said, Ihayah Asher Ihayah. I am beneficially and relationally who I am. And since in Hebrew, verbs are not stuck in time, there is no such thing in Hebrew as past, present, or future tense. Verbs simply are. He was actually saying, I am, I was, I will be.
I'm forever.
So beneficially, based on this relationship, I was, I am, I will be. That's the basis of Yahweh's name. What he's telling you is the answer to the single most important question man can ask. Does God exist? He says, I exist. Ihayah. I exist.
Kind of unlike Amon Ra down the street there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Real.
Yeah, I'm real. I'm real.
A lot of things
yeah.
being said.
Right. Yeah. I'm real. I exist. Single most important question man can ask. And once God says, yeah, my name is based upon I exist, then you ought to consider what he had to say about himself, how he introduced himself, what he said is important to him. And there's nothing he says that's more important to him than this, which is the covenant that he's going to establish with Abraham. So Yahweh said to Abram, now he said names are important. Abram is based upon two Hebrew words, Ab, which is the first word in the Hebrew lexicon. It means father. And Rum, to rise up, to be held in high esteem. Can you think of anything that would be higher in esteem than being the son or daughter of God?
No. And no. The world will get to find that out.
Yeah. And so Yahweh, through Abraham, just as Noah was the an embodiment of what it means to live and choose and act upon and engage in and enter the covenant, Abraham, who was initially Abram, is a metaphor for the father of the covenant, who is Yahweh. So it means father who raises up, who holds in high esteem. It is my request and desire that of your own volition, that you literally walk away from and genuinely come out of your country, Ata Eretz, away from your relatives, Ata Moledeth, and away from your father's house, Ab Beeth, to God's El Realm, Eretz, which as a result of the relationship, I will show you and provide, Ra'ah. So, declarative statement. But in this declarative statement, we find that the most important verb, halak, is walk. And we talked about this at length yesterday. There's really no more important concept, I think, to understand relative to our relationship with Yahweh than the idea of walking. Walking
with him.
Right. Walking says that you're engaged, right?
Yeah.
Unless you're sleepwalking, you're engaged. I mean, you walk to get someplace, right?
You're walking.
And in this particular place, this particular context, you're walking. Abram was asked to walk from a place to a place.
He was asked to walk out of the most religious place in the world at the time, Babylon.
Right, right.
And away from his relatives, which means, you know, when you come to the truth, folks, you're going to upset some relatives and so forth.
And it happens all the time. And if you're going to walk away from the most religious country on earth, Babylon, which is from Babel, which means to corrupt. Which, you know, I'm not trying to extrapolate here that says that, you know, that God's not fond of Babylon. Did not Yah write the entire book of Yirmiyah to express his disdain for Babylon?
Boy, did he. Yeah, along with Christmas trees and...
He goes on to the talks about Asher, which is the basis of Easter, and how reverence for Easter is despicable. He talks about the Christmas tree and how cutting down a Christmas tree and dragging it into the house and decorating it with gold and silver is just a disgusting abomination. He talks about the political and the religious manipulations of Babylon. And condemns them and said, don't in any way engage in any of this. And yet the Christian religion and the Islamic religion are based almost entirely on Babylon. Even the Jewish religion is predicated on the Babylonian Talmud. God's saying, don't
do
that.
Yeshua comes from.
Yes.
Taking the Yah, losing all things Yah instead of Masiyah. We have a Masiyah.
Of course.
Yao Shah, we have Yeshua, and instead of Yahweh, we have Hashem, and on it goes.
Yeah, it goes on and on it goes, yeah. So God is saying don't do that. I want you to walk away from those things, and those things are religion and politics. When Yahusha was explaining the benefit of matzah, of the fungus that is removed from us when we answer his invitation to observe the second of the seven mikra, these invitations to meet with God, he defined what the fungus was. For those who may not have figured it out by reading the Torah itself, he was on the mighty yacht of the fishermen, on a fishing boat, tiny little fishing boat, out there in the Sea of Galilee, and he brought up bread. And they said, oh, you know, we didn't get any unused bread. Oh, so we're so sorry. And God said, come on, folks. Are you stupid? Do you think that I'm concerned that you didn't bring any bread? I'm here to talk to you about yeast. And I want you to know what the yeast represents and which we're eliminating from our souls when you observe unleavened bread. And what he said was, it is politics and religion. That's what I'm trying to remove from you. Just as he was saying the same thing to Abraham, I want you to walk away from the politics and religion of Babylon. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're considering the operative initial statement of the covenant. The covenant is there's only one of them. This notion that the Christian New Testament speaks of a new covenant, a new testament, is completely erroneous. That same book that we were talking about, Larry, Yirmiyah, which was written to Goyim, to Gentiles, says expressly that when the covenant is renewed, it's going to be reaffirmed with Yehudim and Israelites, not with Goyim, therefore not with the Christian church, and that the only difference between the covenant as it currently exists and the covenant as it is renewed with these Israelites and Yehudim will be that Yahweh is going to actually place his Torah inside of us.
Yeah, so not exactly a new covenant. Renewed.
Right, so if you take the book, which is the Torah, that the covenant is presented in. It's the only place in the universe where the Torah is where the covenant is actually presented, where its terms and conditions are communicated. If you take the book, which is forms the basis of the covenant, and you have God himself, who is the author of the Torah and the covenant, write his Torah inside of us so that it becomes literally part of the fabric of our nature, do you think that covenant is therefore going to be the same as Paul's war on the Torah, where he says the Torah was incapable of saving, of doing anything good, that the Torah enslaves?
Not according to Yahweh. He says it's his Torah that is the mercy. And that's really the problem, is that the rabbinic leaders had decided to see and come to view the Torah as a list of things to do and not do, as opposed to seeing the mercy in the Torah, which was all over the Torah, which was that diminished part of Yahweh would take the punishment due the family. He would lead from the front.
And as a matter of fact, in the second of the statements that Yah etched in stone on the first of those two tablets, he specifically said that his mercy would be directed towards those who observed the terms and conditions of his covenant. So Yah's mercy is presented right there etched in stone in the second of the opening three statements on the first of the two tablets. God's telling us, if you want to see his mercy, you want to benefit from his mercy, then pay attention to the terms and conditions of the covenant. The first of those terms and conditions is being presented in these words. This is life and death right here. And Yahweh said to Abram, it is my request and desire that of your own volition, that you will literally walk away from and genuinely come out of your country. It's true for all of us, unless you think that that somewhere that God has a different plan. Now, the problem with that is when he reaffirms his covenant, he's going to base its affirmation on integrating this very Torah that we're reading into our lives, which negates any possibility of a different plan.
Or that the Torah is dead.
So you're either going to act upon this yourself and do the same thing and walk away from your country, or you're not going to participate in the covenant. You're not going to enter the promised land, which is heaven.
Well, now, correct me if I'm wrong, but Yahusha, Yahweh saves, is Hadabar. He's the word of life. And what is that word? The Torah.
Yeah, when he began what's called the Sermon on the Mount, it's actually the Instruction on the Mount, Yahusha, the person errantly known to Christians as Jesus. When Yahusha, which means Yahweh saves, began his presentation on the Sermon on the Mount, and he said that not a single part of a single letter of the words that comprise the Torah would be annulled or discounted so long as the heavens and earth existed. Does that mean that there's zero possibility that this request from God to participate in his covenant, that means that every bit of this is still in full force, that if you want to participate in the covenant, according to Yahusha now, that you need to walk away from your country?
Yeah. That's right. I mean, you're either going to believe his words or you're going to follow religious tradition.
Right. If you're political, Larry, are you not engaged with your country?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, let me explain something. I point out, just as I point out the fallacies in religion and the corruptions in religion, I point out the same things in political nonsense we see all day too.
All right. That's the reason for the first half of the Shattering Myths program is we want to point out the hypocrisy, the immorality, the untrustworthy nature of the U.S. government so that people acknowledge that there's a reason that it's in their interest to disassociate themselves from their country. And the reason is that if you want to participate in the covenant, you not only need to walk away from religion, but you need to walk away from politics, your country. To Shattering Myths, I'm Yada. We're here with Larry. We're talking about Yahweh's declaration to Abraham. It is was expressed to Abraham where Halak Walk Men from was written in such a way that it combines three very important aspects of human grammar. The first of those is that it was written in the call stem, which speaks of this is a literal, this needs to be understood and interpreted literally. I am genuinely and actually asking you to walk away from your country. That's what the call stem conveys. It was written in the so that it communicates volition. It was written in the imperative mood. And in the imperative mood, all of the Hebrew moods express volition in one way or another. The imperative mood is a combination of expressing the desire of the speaker and also that there is a choice to be made under the auspices of free will for the object of the subject's statement. And so this is Yahweh saying, this is my desire. This is what I would like. But I'm not forcing this upon you. It's your choice. So he's asking us of our own free will to do something that he very much wants us to do, which is to walk away from our country. Which means you can't be political. You can't be patriotic. You can't put your hand over your heart and sing the national anthem or the Pledge of Allegiance. You can't do those things. You can't show reverence to a flag. You can't show reverence to your military. You can't show respect for a political leader. You ought not be engaged in the political process. You ought not vote. That's what it means. It means you ought not be dependent upon your government in terms of government handouts. That's what it means. But Larry, you mentioned something that goes beyond this, because Yahweh went beyond it. It wasn't just, I want you to walk away from your country, which was Babylon in the case of Abram. And we recognize that Babylon is important because at the very last prophetic statement that Yahweh makes to us, he's asking us still, right in the waning days of the tribulation, to walk away from Babylon. So he's consistent here. I mean, all the way to the waning days of the tribulation, he's asking us to come out of Babylon. And by saying that, what he's saying is that I'm not talking about Babylon, the country that was, once burned bright. I'm talking about what Babylon represents, because the country is long gone.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's used as a metaphor all throughout Yahweh's words. I mean, he even talks about the United States being Babylon.
Yeah.
Yasha Yahu.
Yeah, the closest proximity to a representative of what Babylon represents today is probably the Roman Catholic Church.
Yeah, but we're under Roman rule. I mean, we have a Roman flag. We have all these Roman rules. We got the fasci up there in the well of the house. Yeah. You know, all these Roman signs.
But as you mentioned, there's another thing that God said you're going to have to walk away from. And this is really difficult for people because of their affinity for family traditions and social mores. And that is, you have to walk away from your relatives, from your kin, from your birthplace, from your origin. Why? Because if you look at our societal and our origins, where if you look at the way that people have congregated, what you find is that someone born into a Christian home is a Christian. Someone born into a Muslim home becomes a Muslim. He just is a Muslim. Someone who is raised in a socialist, secular, humanist home, is going to be an environmentalist, wacko, socialist, liberal. When it is the rare exception that someone is willing to walk away from their roots, from where they came. I was born into a Christian, right-wing political home, and I walked away from both of those things. So did you. Those are rare.
Yeah, well, you come to odds with all of them, and they decide, they decide they don't like you. And
right.
they don't like realism. They don't like what's honest. It's easier to pretend that God doesn't exist than do the homework to find out he does.
The fact is that religion becomes unbelievably popular. And because you're rejecting that which is popular, so is politics. Unbelievably popular, you're rejecting and turning your back on that which is popular, that which they have clung to, all of a sudden you're a threat to them. And so you do have to walk away from your relatives. And then he says, from your father's house. This is very much like what Yahweh said to Adam and Chawa, that whole concept of marriage is that we be willing to walk away from our father's house. Now, why does God, you think, ask us to walk away from our earthly father's house?
Oh, why? Because he knew that it would be unpopular. Yeah, the truth is unpopular.
I think there's a different reason that God is asking us to walk away from our father's, our earthly father's house.
To be dependent on him. Yeah, that could be.
Yeah, yeah. It's just you've got a choice here. You can be part of the human family, and you can cling to your human parents, or you can choose to be part of my family. And, you know, in my family, we don't have two fathers, he's saying. In the covenant family, there is one father. I am the father of the covenant family. And if you want to be part of my family, I want you to acknowledge that you have accepted me as your father, which means you need to say that my father is no longer my earthly father. My father is my heavenly father. Now, that transition for me, Larry, was easy because my earthly father didn't like me very much. And was, wrote me so many hate letters and so many threatening letters that I ended up having to get a restraining order against him just to keep him away from my family. So it was pretty easy for me.
Pretty easy move for you, yeah.
Yeah, pretty easy move for me. That wasn't an easy move. And that was a heart-wrenching, gut-wrenching thing to have to do. But Yahweh was saying that, if you're going to cling to your birth family, then you're not going to be reborn into my family. And what this does is it sheds light on the meaning of the second of the seven instructions that were etched in the second of the two tablets. The second of the two tablets, on the second statement, after telling us the importance of the Shabbat, of the Sabbath, Yahweh tells us that we ought to revere, we ought to highly esteem and value our father and mother. Now, if God here is saying, I want you to walk away from your earthly parents, your birth father, and yet there he etched in stone that you need to revere and view as mightily significant and honor your father, which father is he talking about in the one that he etched in stone?
Not talking about, say, some drunk, alcoholic, child molesting father, that's for sure.
Yeah, he's talking about him as our heavenly father and his maternal aspect of his nature, our spiritual mother. And that becomes obvious here. And so what God is saying is if you want to walk into with him into his realm, his Eretz, the Almighty's Eretz, which is not tangibly, it's Yisrael, but metaphorically, the promised land is heaven. It's camping out with God for all eternity. God is saying, I'm going to provide this this realm. And he will. And he will many times. I think that we're going to witness many universal epics of creation throughout eternity. God's going to provide the home. And so long as you agree to the terms and conditions of the covenant, God will provide your home. But this is the prerequisite. He has laid out the prerequisite for participating in the covenant. And as a result, if you are religious, you are excluded. If you are political, you are excluded. If you are patriotic, you are excluded. If you cling to societal customs, you are excluded. If you prefer your father's family to your heavenly father's family, you are excluded. All right. Now, it's a choice. God's not saying that, by the way, that if you're excluded, does he say if you choose not to walk away from your country, if you want to stay political and religious and the like, is God saying that to Abraham that I'm going to show you, I'm going to burn your britches, I'm going to torture you forever in hell? Is that anywhere in this to be found?
No, he's saying he's going to cut you off from the covenant, which means at the end of your life, you're just going to die. That's not even a punishment.
I mean, yeah, in fact, I don't even think he's going that far. What he's saying here is if, of your own free will, you choose to walk away from your country, from your societal traditions, and from your father's house. If you're willing to do those things, then I will provide a place for you. That's what he's saying. He says, if you'll do this, if you choose to do this, then I will provide a place for you. He has not even said here, if you choose not to do it, then I'm going to make sure that you die. Now, the fact is that if we don't have God's provision, we cease to exist. We stay dependent on man. And so you can draw that conclusion. But God is just saying here, I'm offering you this option. If you choose to participate, you can rely on me to provide the place for us to be together. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So while this is a request, when it comes to the covenant, Larry, is there much of a real difference between a request and a requirement? Pretty fine line, isn't it? In other words, although this is a request, if you choose to ignore the request or reject the request, oppose the request, not answer, not respond to the request, then the consequence is, as you said, you're excluded from the covenant.
Well, I mean, I've gotten letters before that, you know, here, maybe you get RSVP'd, and then here's the requirement. You know, maybe it's a black tie dinner. Maybe it's, you know, whatever it is. There are certain requirements in any household or any party, or, you know, you're not expected to come into somebody's party dressed like an animal, drunk and slobbering all over their floor. I mean, and that's kind of the requirement.
Well, let's say, okay, you've got a home and you've invited some people to come into your home. If those people have walked through 10 miles of mud and they don't want to leave their muddy shoes outside,
they're interested in having them in.
Right. If they've decided that they want to be militaristic and they're armed to the teeth, do you want them into your home with their weapons? How about if they contracted some horrible contagious disease? Do you want them to bring that disease into your home? Welcome back to Shattering Mist. In the 6 minutes we have remaining, we have two callers. The first is Glenn. And Glenn, I apologize for having you on hold so long. I was fixated on the topic that we were talking about, but I understand you want to make a comment about Yahusha's physical presence or manifestation on earth.
Yes, I actually, a couple prefacing things real quick. I can get this out all in about 30 seconds. First of all, to illustrate your concept of the idea of request, well, I think a good illustration of that is an invitation with an RSVP. Respond, si vous plaît. Respond if you please. If you don't respond, your absence will be assumed.
Correct. Yeah, you are absolutely right. You're absolutely right. Total agreement there, and it's a great metaphor, and I appreciate your French.
Yeah, there we go. Thank you. And let's see, the another thing I was going to say is today is my 53rd birthday, another much-overlooked pagan holiday. You know, the birthday was observed largely for astrological purposes.
Yes.
You know, so birthday is very much a personal pagan holiday, which we think let's slip through the cracks.
You are again correct, and I do not celebrate my birthday. I am slightly older than you are. I do not celebrate it for a host of different reasons, but one of those reasons is the celebration of birthdays does play directly into the astrological religions of astrology of Babylon. I mean, Babylon was really the birthplace for astrology as a religion. It's an abomination to Yahweh, and therefore birthdays are something that I also do not celebrate. Glenn, I need to go. Great comments.
One quick question for future reference, if you have time. Please explain your stance on the means by which Yahusha came to be physically present on the earth.
Okay, I'm going to have to do that probably in another program, Glenn, but happy to do it. We have so few minutes left, and we have Diane calling in from Denver on the concept of how do we separate ourselves from our family. Hello, Diane. Welcome back to Shattering Myths.
Good morning, Ada. I wanted to ask, and I know we're real close. When we, in the morning programs, when you talk about the news and the system as it is, politically, how are we supposed to separate ourselves from, because when I'm listening to talk shows, everybody's saying, when are Americans going to be federalists and when are they going to do something? But according to y'all, we are not supposed to do anything. We are, so I'm not understanding how come everybody's so down on us not for not doing anything. I'm not grasping
yeah.
that.
You know, Americans are of the conclusion that, for example, when the Muslims threw planes into buildings, that we had to respond, and the only way that we can respond is go by bombing Muslims. You know, we came to the conclusion that we have to do something, and that doing nothing is worse than doing something. And most of the time when we do something, what we do is counterproductive. It's actually makes the situation worse rather than better. And we very seldom nationally take the time to understand what has occurred and what is the right response. It's one of the reasons why I say, you know, you ought not vote, because all of the malfeasance is going on with our country, particularly economic malfeasance and the destruction of our country from an economic point of view and a military point of view as well. We can't solve it, because no matter who you're going to vote for, they are making it worse. And so,
y'all have it all under control? I mean, that's kind of
no,
what I was
No, absolutely not. No, absolutely not. No, that's not
another Christian myth.
Yeah, that's a Christian thing. Yeah, the omnipresent God that's a micromanager that's involved in all of human affairs and has everything under control, absolutely not. He gave man free will. And so we have free will to spiral things completely out of control. And Yahweh's only going to intervene when we've spiraled things so far out of control that we're on the precipice of destroying the planet and all life on it. And that's when he is returning. That'll be Yom Kippurim. Now, he's going to honor the terms and conditions of his plan. He's going to do exactly what he said he was going to do. But you can't blame him for the mess the world's in. He is not micromanaging any of this. We made this mess. He's going to clean it up. But he's going to clean it up without any of those who made the mess surviving it.
Well, how do we get through all of that if we like voting and stuff? If we're supposed to stay out of voting and things like that,
God said to walk away from our country. So, you know, you can interpret what walking away from your country means. From my perspective, it means that you ought not be political. From my perspective, you ought not be patriotic. From my perspective, you ought not praise the military. You ought not sing the Pledge of Allegiance or salute the flag. That's what it means to me. You can interpret it as you wish, but that's what it signals to me.